We're going to work together for about an hour and a half here before going off to a different kind of experience before lunch. We're going to work together on the whole issue of forgiveness. Out of the conviction that making peace with our childhood requires forgiveness. Forgiveness of parents, of brothers, of sisters, some of the idealisms in our society. For example, one of the idealisms of our society is the nuclear family, which represents only about 14% of our population, which many of you were not raised in. Other adults, and perhaps more than anyone else ourselves. Forgiveness releases the gifts of our childhood for our present use. And so for the next hour and a half, we want to talk together about what is forgiveness. We want to chew on a few central concepts. And it's my hope that obviously we can't exhaust this issue of forgiveness in the hour and a half, but a few central ideas that we'll be able to work on together will be helpful to you in some new and different kinds and some important kinds of ways. Now, at several points this morning, I want to ask you to be contributors with me in this process. And listening to you yesterday, I know there's a great deal of wisdom in this group. And I think we have much to share with each other. In listening to you yesterday, I listened to some of the images that many of you shared that are obviously issues that you're working on personally, and particularly in light of what it means to forgive. You're working on issues like forgiving parents who needed you to be perfect, or who assigned you a specific role in the family as therapist or peacemaker. You're struggling with what having to have been a girl in a man's world, or parents that neglected you, who were too busy for you, or parents who programmed you to achieve, which is kind of a reflection, you see, of our society and the nuclear family idealism of our society. Everyone has children who are smarter than average and will always be successful. And you're struggling with perhaps having been an afterthought or an inconvenience to your parents, or never having been allowed to be a child, or, as one person said, a teenager, or not finding adventure in your childhood, or being encouraged to adventure. That was reflected in your fantasies and perhaps even nighttime dreams. That you were taught to look happy and when you weren't happy, and so there was a kind of rejection of how you were really feeling. Parents wanted you to be older than you were. Some said they grew up with a good deal of shame or felt like they didn't belong. Or those of you that talked about your happy childhood and how can you appropriate that into your present life. Well, I'd like to begin this morning by drawing upon your wisdom and having us respond. And in the responses that you make, I'd like to ask you to offer them, and they won't be judged in any way in terms of being right or wrong. But let's just collect some images together. Somebody may say something that you don't personally buy into or agree with. That's fine. You can just leave it. And on the other hand, somebody may say something that really kind of says, yeah, that's what I was searching for and couldn't say it. And you're free to take that with you as a gift from the day. First of all, I want to ask two questions. The question is, what is forgiveness? And then, secondly, what isn't forgiveness? We have sometimes thought, what is forgiveness, or perhaps been taught was forgiveness, but discovered that it wasn't forgiveness at all. So if we could kind of work at both of these, what is forgiveness? What do you think forgiveness is? Do I have another board right in here? And what isn't forgiveness? How about that? Just have you respond to either one of those. Yeah.
Question, it seems to me that if you say that you forgive, and I guess that's part of the definition, that says that at some level you accept what happened, and in a sense if you do that, it's a kind of an approval, and that seems, I mean, there are things that should not be approved.
So forgiveness isn't necessarily approval.
Well, if you accept what happened, in a sense, you are allowing. I mean, you're saying it was okay to happen, aren't you?
Okay, we're going to struggle with that word. What does it mean to accept? I would say forgiveness isn't necessarily approval, but forgiveness is acceptance. And hang on to that, and we'll talk about that. That's an important sentence.
Yeah. Letting somebody off.
That's what forgiveness is? All right.
Letting the other person who's asking for the forgiveness, you know, say if you hurt somebody's feelings and they said, well, I'm sorry I did that to you. And you said, well, that's okay. Well, that's letting that person off the hook.
What does it mean to let them off the hook? Does that mean you say it's okay?
Yeah, basically. It's letting the particular person put their feelings aside, and they can dismiss it, whether you dismiss it or not, that's beside the point. It's that automatic reflex in our society today, when somebody comes up and asks you for forgiveness, if they've done something wrong. It seems like an automatic response to somebody saying, well, that's okay, don't worry about it. Whether you yourself have really forgiven them or not.
It almost sounds like cheap grace or something, mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Right. That probably isn't forgiveness.
No.
So that's sort of, what would we call that? It isn't
forgiveness.
Cheap grace. Cheap grace, that's what it sounds.
So I was.
Forgiveness isn't cheap, it isn't, okay, that's interesting issues, yeah.
I struggled with this one.
Yeah.
Given a lot of thought, when I've forgiven somebody myself, it usually is when that pain that I can remember that person does something,
right.
And I feel pain.
Right.
And when I finally forgiven that person, I don't feel that pain anymore.
Okay, so there's a change in the pain.
A change of pain within myself. And I think when that person finally feels forgiven, they notice a couple of things, like maybe I don't bring up the past, like I forget, I don't talk about it. I don't talk about that thing I did anymore. Because I don't feel the pain, I basically have forgotten that incident that they did.
If there isn't change in the pain, there's probably not, forgiveness probably hasn't occurred.
So and it would change my behavior towards it.
That's the opposite too, yeah.
I think forgiveness is a letting go. And that sort of correlates with what she said, because when there is the change in the pain and you don't feel the need to bring it up again, it's because you've let go of it.
Yeah, letting go is very important. Yeah, forgiveness isn't holding on.
But I don't think forgiveness means forgetting.
I don't think you can say, it was bad, so I forgot it. That's almost denial of it.
We can put that in there. Forgiveness does not mean forgetting. Forgiveness isn't forgetting.
I think in part, letting go is stopping assigning blame.
Okay, yeah, stopping.
Or an accusation.
Yeah, that's good. Stopping assigning blame.
So along with that, maybe you could add accepting atonement?
Can you say more about atonement?
If someone wants to be forgiven rather than holding on to your grudge, you accept their expression of.
Okay, so it has to do with letting go of your, grudge, right?
Right.
Or blame. And accepting their.
Their offer.
Their offer. Okay, yeah, Tim.
I think a real key in forgiveness, to go back and what is, a lot of people use forgiveness and forgetting as synonyms, and they are not. Because one of the things you can forgive, you know, but still remember, and forgiving, I think, is really a genuine forgiving. Is it not a two-way street? Is that both parties, the injured and the transgressor, shall we say, they both have to come to some meeting or some sort of communication, you know, depending on what sense there is to why this accident took place. So you have to understand why the person transgressed. And then you have to incorporate where they're coming from, you know, to whether you're going to give forgiveness. And that person who transgressed has to trust in the person that they've transgressed against to accept their forgiveness. So there's a communication and a touching of the two spirits that's involved in genuine forgiveness, I think.
So forgiveness is two-way. Forgiveness is not one-way.
It is definitely a two-way.
And the levels will vary. We'll talk about what happens if the person that you need to forgive is dead or is uninterested.
A real quick corollary to that is like a parent and a child is a real difference. You understand why a two-year-old does something. And then, you know, of course, then you have equals, you know, two equal minds or equal spirits have to work out a situation. Somehow there's a communication and an understanding.
Okay, we'll go around the room here. Carl?
Forgiveness comes out of self-interest, forgiving because of my need rather than the other person's need. So that my doing it doesn't necessarily have to be communication because you're doing it for yourself. Whether the person accepts forgiveness or not, you're doing it for yourself. You've gone through the ritual and that's what's healing.
You're saying forgiveness is a need.
That I have.
Yep.
I don't initially do it for the other person. I do it for myself.
As opposed to some kind of martyr thing where I'm going to make things right with everybody else.
For the fact that she first.
I think we'll go back here. You're
as it is a brainstorming type of a session, I would say forgiveness does not need to be a two-way communication. I can forgive someone for something without them receiving that forgiveness. It doesn't have to be. And saying what it isn't, it doesn't require a change in behavior. It doesn't have to on the person that you are forgiving. If we say, I'll forgive you if you change the behavior that I'm forgiving, quite often that change in behavior isn't something that has happened.
We're talking about.
You might forgive a parent's alcoholism while they're still in the disease.
Right. Forgiving in spite of.
It doesn't have to be something that you know, is received.
Okay. I'll use that phrase.
The role of confession and forgiveness. So what is forgiveness? What is confession? In order for me to get to a place of forgiving, what does it mean to confess
Okay. Well, I wish we had all day. Okay, yeah.
For me, I think it means that I'm willing to turn around and begin to take a wall down instead of not doing anything about it, but just that I'm willing to take that step to start.
Well, you're going to turn around and do something, right?
Because I think that the wrongs make walls between people and block the relationship. And so if I decide, I'm willing to begin to take it down.
Okay, and I think forgiveness is not just mental gymnastics that I do individually. It's got to include more than that. It's not just a personal, private kind of thing.
And it's not, what I mean too is that it's not voluntary for me. The moment is when I decide to begin the process, but then that doesn't fix it all.
Yeah, it requires something of,
But I don't understand, if you turn around and say, okay, I'm going to make some moves and try some reconciliations because I'm going to forgive you, and the situation hasn't changed and the same thing happens, then you're just in a cycle of, well, gee, I put my walls down, I'm hurt, but I'm going to forgive you, and this will just keep being circular forever unless the other person, I mean, if it's not two-way, what good does it do?
Okay, that's... That's a big issue that's emerging here that we should have planned for this morning.
I think another part of letting go and also a part of confession is giving up your unreasonable expectations and ideals about the person, because that's where a lot of your anger is coming from, because you wanted your parent to be the ideal parent, and you have to come to an understanding that they aren't capable of it and accept that.
It's the letting go of the illusion that they could be how I would want them to be.
Letting go of your unreasonable expectations.
Accepting them how they really are, in spite of the fact that their
behavior may not change.
Their behavior is obnoxious.
The acceptance of something that might have happened to them as a child that perpetuates this type of action, from generation to generation. And maybe they're not willing to face that, but maybe this generation is. My generation, I'm willing to face it. They aren't, and somehow I have to forgive that person. Well, I'm not sure right now that I have to. I haven't gotten to that stage yet.
Yeah.
But I think that we also have to walk a mile in their shoes too. And maybe that helps the acceptance of that. Doesn't change where you are, and they're still in denial. Does that make sense?
Yeah, right. We're going to talk about innocence and how we need to move out of that in terms of walking with the other person.
I think for me too, part of the moment of turning around involves some owning of my feelings and not keeping telling myself that I shouldn't feel this way.
So forgiveness is owning your feelings, as opposed to projecting your feelings, as opposed to saying they're the ones that created those. They gave me those feelings.
Or trying to deny them.
Or denying.
Yeah.
So forgiveness is not denying your feelings or blaming someone else for your feelings, but owning your own feelings. Okay, yeah, Jeanette.
The important one to me is the willingness to put the past into the past. Okay. And sometimes that is a circular thing that gets dealt with, and then later it gets dealt with again. And there's many different levels where you think you've dealt with it, and it comes up again and again.
Like an onion that you keep peeling off different layers on.
I just wondered, our first one, they're not necessarily approved. Is that ever apparent? Because if you approved, there would be no need for forgiveness. So in a way, it's like they don't fit. I mean, if you approved of that, certainly you wouldn't think of there's any need for forgiveness. So is there ever any approval?
Okay.
I don't know. That's
an interesting comment. Jackie?
Yeah, since we're just kind of free-floating, I guess, forgiveness has an element of mystery to me, and in some way creates space for newness in the relationship, or a new dynamic, or a different level, be that person alive or dead or whatever, but somehow there's transformation, or there's space created for a new way of relating in some way. And I don't know how to describe that.
I can really feel into that.
We have trouble with accepting, I think, but a lot of the pain is, and the injustice is so great that it's real hard to accept. But I think forgiveness can come when we understand the situation. We can understand both sides and see and have some come to some acceptance of why it happened.
Okay. So understanding is important.
Kind of respond to what Jackie said.
Yeah. So
forgiveness has an element of smallness about it, and in that smallness, there's power, and that's connected to responsibility in some way.
Smallness, say more about that. Smallness.
Sometimes the aggression or hostility, some of that I carry with me, perhaps makes me quite bigger than I am, and kind of more grandiose than I am.
Okay.
And forgiveness is a way of reducing me to more of a relational.
One way of blowing ourselves up is to kind of wallow in how abused I've been. Okay, that's kind of real negative, sort of mucking.
I had an experience last week where someone did something wrong, and in this interaction, he said that, and he says, "Please forgive me," and I said, "I do forgive you," and he kept coming back with that, but I didn't let him off the hook. I accepted that he did do something wrong, and to put it in kind of a mean way, perhaps I let him accept his own guilt. But I have forgiven him, but he couldn't forgive himself, or that's what it seemed to be. And someone said something about the two-way, and I thought, well, the Lord Jesus Christ has forgiven me many years ago, but I couldn't accept that. So it was kind of the same perception. Until I can accept that he's forgiven me, then that relationship isn't right as at the beginning, or giving as before, so to speak. So until we can rightly relate, I did something wrong, he did something wrong, but the forgiveness is there, there's still a gap. So it has a lot to do with the other person accepting the forgiveness. It isn't a forgiveness isn't a two-way street necessarily. I did forgive this fellow, but until he could accept his own guilt and work through that acceptance, then there still isn't a two-way street, and that's the way in our Christianity.
So again, it raises the question of how can forgiveness happen in spite of the fact that the other either continues on or is unwilling to. Okay, we just about run on the board. That's a good place to end. And I'm sure we could. Now, what I'd like to do this morning is kind of start out with somewhat of a philosophical, theological definition, and work work from there to the more psychological side and more practical. Some more practical definitions. I'd like to read to you, first of all, some statements, first from St. Paul and then from St. Paul Tillich. First from St. Paul. This is Philippians 3:13. One thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and straining forward to what lies ahead. And from Paul Tillich, which comes from a sermon of his in a book called The Eternal Now. The sermon's entitled Forgetting and Being Forgotten. These images, and let me read to you all of them, then we'll go back and I'd like to talk with you about each of the images that he offers us. Life could not continue without throwing the past into the past, liberating the present from its burden. Without this power, life would be without a future. It would be enslaved by the past. Nothing new could happen. But not everything of the past is pushed into the past. Something of the past remains alive in the present, so that there is ground from which to grow into the future. Every growth displays its conquered past, something in the form of scars. Life uses its past and battles against it at the same time in order to thrust forward towards its own renewal. Forgiving presupposes remembering, and it creates a forgetting, not in the natural way we forget yesterday's weather, but in the way of the great in spite of that says, I forget although I remember. Without this kind of forgetting, no human relationship could endure healthily. I speak of the lasting willingness to accept the ones who have hurt us. Such forgiveness is the highest form of forgetting, although it is not forgetfulness. The stumbling block of having violated another is pushed into the past, and there is the possibility of something new in the relationship. Forgetting in spite of remembering is forgiveness. We can live only because our guilt is forgiven and thus eternally forgotten. And we can love only because we forgive and we are forgiven. Okay, I'd like to chew on each one of those because obviously that's too much for us all to begin to remember. First of all, life could not continue without throwing the past into the past, liberating the present from its burden. Without this power, life would be without a future. It would be enslaved by the past. Nothing new could happen. What does it mean, or what could it mean, or what has it meant to you? You've all struggled with this. To throw the past into the past. Why is that important? How do you do that, or how has it really been frustrating to try to do that? What is your response? What does it mean to throw the past into the past? What the past? Yeah.
Well, I know for me, it would be like the hurt, the anger, or whatever over the past. If you don't put it back in the past, it's going to affect how you react now to others. Even when, you know, you don't really feel that way or it's an inappropriate response, it's still sitting there, you know, and it keeps falling out, you know. You don't put it back in for you, it'll affect.
Well, at times it feels good to be angry or mad at someone, because if you have that as a wall in front of you, then you don't have to work on the relationship. You continue with that anger or hostility towards the other person. So if you keep those things in the past right up in front of you, then you don't have to work on a relationship. You can forgive.
For me, that passage of putting the past in the past brings to mind the image of snow, especially up here, where in the winter, the snow is too high and the roads are blocked and you can't get anywhere. There can be no movement. You're trapped until you come along with a snow blower or a grader and you shovel the snow out and you put it behind you and you clear a road to move ahead. The snow's still there, but now it's out of your way and you can move on.
I think letting go of the anger, it takes an awful lot of energy to be angry and focus it in. And it's sort of also the image of the elephant in the house that you don't want to, no one wants to acknowledge. If you don't let go of those problems, you end up carrying it on your back and you can't do a whole lot when you're dragging around that much anger and pain.
It seems, at least in my case, that there wasn't a whole lot of difficulty in putting the past into as far as the parents, because you go through and you understand what went on, and you say, you know, this is part of the past, they're not changing, I'm no longer a child, I don't have to do those things anymore. The problem is not with putting things in the past, and I don't even see that it's a matter of forgiveness, because what's happened is the things that your parents told you about yourself, that you were a failure or that you were always perfect, you don't need your parents to say that anymore because your own head is telling you that. Now it's yourself doing it, so it's not a problem for you to deal with your parents always. It's how do you, in fact, convince yourself that these things aren't true because now you've taken over the role of the parent and are doing it to yourself.
Right. Yeah, we internalize our parents, don't we? And they keep speaking to us.
And it's not the parents anymore. I mean, they're not relevant. It's a different...
It's not our biological.
Right, it's not the physical people out there. They are, in fact, in the past.
Yeah.
Now you're creating new ones.
Right. Yeah. Good. Okay.
For me, putting the past in the past with my father was that I can think of him and the good things I remember without there being overshadowed by the bad things. And that my first thoughts back can be of the good things instead of the bad things.
So what you're saying is that one way to get the past into the past is to develop a more holistic view of what
you know. We can each look. I work with special ed kids. You can look at them coming in the door and think about their problems, or you can look at them and think about their good things,
their possibilities.
Yeah, the possibilities, the good things, and don't let the problems overshadow the other. But. Except.
Right. I think that's really important. Not only looking at ourselves holistically, but looking at those in our past holistically,
that
they were whole people too, meaning they had both positive and negative poles to their own behavior and actions and who they were. So they weren't just one or the other. In fact, we're probably in trouble if they're on either side, because the most difficult parents to deal with are the good parents to break away from. I mean, they're really tough. They're really bad, then you can dismiss them. They're really good. Then you really internalize them and they speak to you the rest of the time. Yeah, something else.
When Tillich says to throw the past into the past, has that image for me of getting out from underneath, lying down or something like that. And what comes to mind is the movie The Mission. Earlier in one scene, De Niro was climbing up this mountain with all of his hardware and his weaponry, climbing. His weight, and someone at the top of the mountain cuts it off. All that goes down 200-300 feet down the cliff. And at some point, he's not quite liberated internally, but at least the weight is off him. It's been thrown off, all the past and guilt. I guess he had killed somebody or something. Mm-hmm. Those images come.
Yeah, that's a powerful scene, symbolically. There was one point where the load was relieved him, but he wasn't ready yet. So he had to go get it again, keep on until,
I think something that sort of connects with that is not being a victim anymore. Not denying that I was victimized. You know, I'm not trying to say that, but stopping the role that I, self-pity and don't you feel sorry for me, this is, you know, relating my whole life today, carrying all that stuff with me. I'm a victim. This all, don't you feel sorry for me? This all happened to me. Is, you know, stopping that and maybe dealing in a healthy way that I was victimized.
That's really an important distinction, isn't it? Between accepting the fact that you were victimized, but that does not confine you to being a victim. And that's not who you are.
Yeah, I just wanted to squeeze something in here. I hope it's not a question of things. While we were talking about the mission, last night when I asked everyone here to give me their input for resources that I can let people know, future guests know about in this area, I neglected to mention that the resources I'd be particularly interested in hearing about is just what you said. That scene from the mission, scenes from other movies, other novels, poetry, music, which has spoken to you and has been used for your recovery and acceptance. And I'd be particularly interested to hear about things like Hans just mentioned.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeanette. Anyone else on this image? Okay, let's go on to the next one. But not everything of the past is pushed into the past. Something of the past remains alive in the present, so that there is ground from which to grow into the future. Every growth displays its conquered past, sometimes in the form of scars. Life uses its past and battles against it at the same time, in order to thrust forward towards its own renewal.
The image that comes to me is the entrance to the prison at Dachau that we may remember. The image of that tattered Jewish prisoner, the striped. There are some images that are so vivid that there's no way I want to repeat them. And so to hold that informs me that it is so painful, that it's, the cost is so great, that nothing will allow me to repeat it. So that part of that image of the past becomes the scar that's still part of my future. But because it's there, my future is cleaner, is clean. And I trust that I won't repeat. I trust that the scar will serve to inhibit the repeating.
Yeah.
And as I forgive my parents for things they visited on me, I can then examine the same things in myself that I visited on my and that is a constant reminder that I don't want to repeat what my parent did myself, that I want to stop repeating that, or repeating that in my life. I don't want to continue that. The image of the bug stops here. The character defect stops here. I'm going to stop it here in my family, myself.
And part is in part of recovery is developing self-worth is instead of to see the pain and the failure and the rejection that you had, is to look at it from the perspective of a survivor, the strength and courage that you developed as a survivor, and to know to carry that with you to battle the future fears that you face. That, you know, I have I've endured this, I've survived this, I can go on.
That's a real Easter message, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And to extend what she's saying, I think of Joseph. I've been studying him in Genesis. And all that happened to him, he is an image of Christ. He said, I believe that, I don't know. I think he is as an image of Christ in him. And he was put through all the suffering, placed in a pit, the hatred of his brothers. He learned so much. It prepared him for his future role. And I look at that as within myself. The bad things that happened to me have developed character. And in the case of Joseph, it made him, he learned the leadership skills. He learned humility. He was placed in those positions. It was part of God's supreme purpose. And that there can be good out of the bad. Good can come out of the bad. And it perfected Joseph. And when bad things happen to me, I hope, this is my goal, that I can take it and to know that God has given it to me. And that's why he said every growth displays its conquered past. I've conquered that. If God helped me conquer that. And it's perfecting me. It's made me a little closer to that purity, that image, that growth that we're doing. But we're all trying to become Christ-like.
There's some great, great stories of individuation. Joseph, I think Jacob is the greatest one. It's really interesting to read those from the standpoint of their own personal transformation.
I've been thinking, listening to all what's been shared here, and just recently I've been going through the 12-step.
Yeah.
And in the last 6 months, and I think at the beginning I started blaming my parents for a lot of things that maybe I have to, in retrospect now, I think is more my own doing. In other words, I was blaming them for things that I think that are really more of my own doing, so I'm reevaluating what I've written in the past. And maybe it was by putting it off on them rather than my own, you know, my own problem that I picked up as I grew and as I matured. And so I'm not saying this is something to be written down, but in reflecting back, and the more I work the material and being here, it helps me to reevaluate what is the real problem.
We're going to talk a little bit about what does it mean to let go of our injured innocence, mm-hmm. and take responsibility ourselves for this. Yeah.
Just one of the comments that he said about Dachau, which I think tied in with Carl, says is that using the past in that nature, it helps develop boundary within ourselves as an individual and as a society. You know, it provides us a framework in which to operate. You know, we can't go back to that form of Dachau, or like Carl says, the buck on our conduct stops here. And we need those boundaries as an individual, a healthy boundary.
Okay, let's continue on. And I realize another thing now, I really should have provided you with these quotes because they're rather, but we can do that, Jan, can't we?
No problem.
We can do this, guys. Passing the buck.
Yes, we can.
Part of our research. Forgiving presupposes remembering, and it creates a forgetting. Not in the natural way we forget yesterday's weather, but in the way of the great in spite of, that says, I forget, although I remember. Without this kind of forgetting, no human relationship could endure healthily. I'd like to respond to that.
Yeah. One of the things that comes to my mind is how important it is for parents to share with their children so the children will eventually have some understanding of what the parents went through. Because as I try to think of my own parents, there was my father was from a particular religious background that wasn't compatible or unknown. It was a strange thing, and he didn't share that with any of us. So I'm thinking, what was his perspective? What were the hurts there? And my mother came from Canada. What? Why did she come down? How come she didn't share that she was in Florida? How did she get to Southern California? So I'm sure there was a lot of hurts there that I didn't even know. So as I go back and try to understand them, how can I remember, how can I forget if I don't remember, so to speak? So how important it is to share our stories specifically as parents with our children so they'll have some understanding of what went on. The Old Testament is there for a reason for us to understand, but if we don't ever read it or know it,
have things that happen to me, but as long as I'm not carrying the pain anymore, it's not going to affect my healthy relationships now. If I have gone through the forgiveness, I'll remember, but I won't feel the pain.
I think it's more forgetting the anger, because to me, the pain is there, or the pain can be revisited in other experiences as you go on. Sort of echoes of it come, but the anger, forgetting how angry, because I think you can feed on anger, and it's easy to, or chew on it. You can pick it up, you know, like, and you know, you got to let it go and forget about it.
A little bit like childbirth pain, it'd be silly to say that a couple of weeks after you can't remember it,
yeah.
But you don't remember to the point you don't have any more kids. I mean, it doesn't determine what you're going to do. Because after all, there was something good that came out of it. But I mean, if we hung on to how miserable I was that day, we probably wouldn't have any more kids.
Yeah, following up on what you said, when I met with my own children to explain, to ask their forgiveness for my behavior, it was very helpful for them to understand my family, my own family's development and my development and how I developed within the family, how I acquired some characteristics that I then utilized in dealing and dealing with them. And going back to passing the buck, you know, I was able to tell them I was going to try to stop that behavior in myself and hope that they would. I'm sure I was passing it on to them. I hope that they would examine themselves for the same kind of behaviors so that they would be alert to the same thing and could take action again on themselves. And this all comes from a sense of history, how this has developed in the family.
Okay. Yeah, Chris?
It seems to me that forgiveness is something that's ongoing. You may forgive yourself once or forgive another person once, and that's what starts the ball rolling. But like salvation, you gain salvation perhaps. It's an ongoing thing. It's like sanctification. It's an ongoing kind of thing. And without continually remembering what you're forgiving, maybe you can't continue to learn, to continue to grow.
Okay, thanks for all your
I was just wondering, I mean, from listening to people talking, it sounds as though to some extent the key is to be able to remember and see some of the good that came out of it. And because that's how you can remove some of the pain that's associated with those memories. But if there was nothing good that ever came out of those relationships, and that every time you think about those relationships, they're just as painful as the day they happened. that sounds like you can't move on. But that's sort of a requirement somehow, that there was something good out of it, and that the pain goes away, like childbirth. But if it doesn't go away, then what do you do?
By saying that there's something good came out of it, it's in no way saying that what happened was good. But there could have been something new for you, or for me, as I have worked through that, that has ultimately been, gotten me to a new place. And in that sense, it's good. Good is a real hard word in our society, in our language. Stronger, fuller.
But that assumes that somehow you get stronger by working through these things. And I can imagine where you might, in fact, just have to be seen away each time you have to deal with one more thing.
Yeah. Well, it's complex. Yeah. Somebody? Yeah.
I think it was from a Negro slave, this expression that Bert Bahana used to quote has been really helpful to me in my own recovery, and that is, I ain't what I want to be, I ain't what I'm going to be, but thank God I ain't what I was. Which brings up, you know, that it is a process. We live in a state of imperfection, but we don't have to be stuck there. There are times when we may feel we're stuck there. There are times when we may feel we're going down instead of up, or when we stay about the same. But over of the long haul, it really is a process.
Did you
and I think that expression, I ain't what I...
Yeah. Repeat that for us.
I ain't what I want to... I ain't what I want to be. I can't even remember. But thank God I ain't what I was.
Scott?
Yeah, you got to holler up here. I tend not to look upstairs. I'm sorry.
I just want to add one other thing to quotable quotes. Okay. Psychologist Jennifer James, I went to a lecture with her in which she was talking about relationships between parents and adult children, and how that she recommended they each give each other identical certificates. And the certificate would say, I'm sorry for ways that I hurt you, but I did the best I could with what I knew at the time. And I often think of that.
Okay. I think I need to move along because there's a couple other kind of central issues I want to work on today, but just to read you again the last two. I speak of the lasting willingness to accept the ones who have hurt us. Such forgiveness is the highest form of forgetting, although it is not forgetfulness. The stumbling block of having violated another is pushed into the past, or Tillich could have rewritten it, the stumbling block of having been violated by another. And there is the possibility of something new in the relationship, which could mean what's going on within us, because it might not mean at all any kind of relationship with the person that's the actual historical person. And we'll deal with this word accept in a few moments. Forgetting, and then the fifth one, quote that I had from him, forgetting in spite of remembering is forgiveness. We can live only because our guilt is forgiven and thus eternally forgotten. And we can love, and it's the last phrase that really caught my eye. And we can love only because we forgive and are forgiving. Loving ourselves, loving another, involves this process of forgiving and being forgiven. Okay, I'd like to move along to another central issue, which I think is really, really crucial. One of the ways that we have been split from our past, from our pain, from making peace with our childhood, with being related to our feelings, this is particularly true of men. Since women stereotypically are more in touch with their feelings than men, men look down, they don't see much. That's why if you ask a man how he feels, sometimes they'll get much of an answer, because there ain't nothing there. From the work we all need to do, is that the culture that we are a part of, and this has, was enculturated by our parents. It's been strongly supported by Christianity. This is not strongly supported by Jesus, but it's been strongly supported by Christianity. Has been to convince us that we need to be perfect human beings. We have largely grown up believing we need to be perfect human beings. What that means is that somehow we need to be, or someday be able to be, an unblemished person. And even us preachers have been guilty, I think, in our pulpits of having subtly supported this notion that we ought not to be blemished individuals. Or we have said that if we are blemished individuals, we all know we're blemished individuals, then we have held out the promise that we could be unblemished individuals, which is another way of supporting the split between blemished and unblemished. We have said that God will take away all of our past sin and guilt, and we quote chapter and verse, and send it out into the wilderness or deposit it deep in the ocean. So forth. We have interpreted the cross of Jesus and the empty tomb with a Christology, an understanding of Christ that says that if you believe that Good Friday and Easter, God will magically take away your past and make you an unblemished person once again. Rather than seeing Good Friday and Easter as a transforming experience, an experience that provides all the metaphors and models and descriptions of how transformation takes place, we have seen it as a way to avoid or ultimately get to a place of being unblemished. We have believed what our English language, how our English language interprets Matthew 5:48, which says, we must be perfect as our Heavenly Father is perfect. The two big problems with that phrase, one is perfect, and of course the other is Father, but it's perfect that I want to focus on. I think this has not allowed us as individuals to understand ourselves as whole people. And a whole includes all of the opposites. It's like a circle. Which means that we include both our blemishes and our unblemishes. So grace has to do with relieving us of the prison of our blemishes, but including them in our understanding of ourselves, our limitations, our sins, our guilt. We say as Christians that the cross and the empty tomb freed us from death and the bonds of death. We didn't say that we're never going to die. Let me read to you a couple of quotes. First of all, from Elizabeth Howes. Elizabeth Howes has a book that unfortunately was sold out in our bookstore. We do have another one called Jesus' Answer to God, which is a reflection on some biblical texts by her, which I would highly recommend to you. And few things have done more damage to human nature than the attempt to be perfect in the usual sense. Whether perfection is achieved or not, the goal itself is inhibiting and repressive because it keeps down all imperfect and growing elements of oneself. To be all-inclusive means including light and dark, letting go of all the ego images one has of oneself. All-inclusive means giving up a simple way of looking at oneself and others and admitting we are duplex and complicated beings with mixed emotions, with things in our unconscious not yet known to our conscious side. This means to be compassionate to our own and to other people's dark side in the hope of transformation. Or Leo Buscaglia, perhaps some of you have read some of his, here's an example, Living, Loving, and Learning. He's been a popular writer that writes a new book every 6 months. He's much on the banquet circuit. Anyway, he says some really good things off now. His books are getting to be a different, same stuff, different title, but anyway. There is no more personally rewarding moment than when we can truly forgive and are forgiven. At that instant, we become really free. Free to move forward as fully functioning human beings. Illusions of perfection, ours and others, are shattered, and we accept and are accepted as the vulnerable, imperfect human beings that we are. Or David Augsburger, and I'm going to talk more about David in a moment, but this book we do have a number of in the bookstore. It's the book about 8 or 9 years old, and one of the best books I know on the subject of forgiveness. And it's a book that's a lot of fun. You can read it this way, caring enough to forgive, or you can start backwards, caring enough not to forgive. Or you can read any chapter, because I like these books where in one page he tells you everything he's going to say in the chapter, so you don't have to read the whole chapter. And then if you really get into it, there's a bunch of questions and exercises to do at the end of the chapter. I mean, you know, this is a book for everybody. So, great little book. David writes, since nothing we intend is ever faultless, that's an important statement. Nothing we ever intend is ever faultless. In other words, there's no way to be perfect. And nothing we attempt ever without error. See, we're a whole complexity of things. We have our strengths and our limitations. And we develop something that was developed. So the things we're sensitive to and the things we're not sensitive to. And to expect each other to be perfect, or expect ourselves to be perfect without blemish, it confines us then constantly to the guilt and the shame both our imperfections and blemishes. And nothing we achieve without some measure of finitude and fallibility we call humanness. We are saved by forgiveness. And of course, that's what the grace of God is like. It's not the escape from blemishes, but the knowledge of forgiveness, the experience of forgiveness. Now, to return ultimately to Paul Tillich, and I've hunted high and low for this phrase, but and I can't find it. It's in one of his sermons. But another definition that Paul Tillich has of forgiveness is he talks about forgiveness as accepting the unacceptable. What would it mean, or could it mean for you to accept the unacceptable? Let's deal first of all with the word accept. What does the word accept mean?
Receive.
Receive. What else? Any other words or phrases?
Knowledge.
Knowledge.
No, acknowledge.
Oh, acknowledge. Okay.
Own.
Own. What does own mean?
Not to make it a part of yourself.
To allow it to be.
Okay.
Stop fighting.
Stop fighting. Putting up, say that another way for me.
Listen.
Letting go of your own agenda. Listening.
Okay, so if accepting someone means letting go of them having to be like you would like them to be, is that it? Or even letting go of yourself having to be how you'd like yourself to be.
Understanding.
Understanding.
Recognizing our humanity.
Say something more about that. Recognizing our humanity.
That we're fallible.
Okay.
We aren't God. We're not godlike, and that we all make mistakes. We all sin, and recognizing their humanity is accepting them and our own humanity, and being able to forgive.
Yeah, please.
Well, it seems like if I'm accepting a behavior, either myself or somebody else, that I wouldn't otherwise accept, it seems like I'm allowing that behavior to happen. But not only that, but allowing it to happen again. And see, that's one thing that I have a hard time, the idea of accepting and unacceptable. Because we can accept something that's happened, as in the past, saying, okay, I accept that happened. But usually we don't want that behavior that hasn't been such a hard behavior to happen. And that to me seems like that would be like acceptance. The one I say acceptance that God would have, that we might have a hard time having. And it's like agape.
Everything that everyone said basically boils down to, it seems to me, to changing your standard. You know, as in saying, you know, when you say that this person is not fallible, then you're lowering your standard, saying it doesn't have to be perfect, I don't allow this. If at some point you hit a place where it's not reasonable to change your standard, to allow that as part of that acceptable.
I'd say accepting is not condoning. I think sometimes we get those two words mixed up. To accept something is to acknowledge that it happened. But it's not condoning it and saying it's okay. To me, that's a big distinction.
I just think there's something really radical about the acceptance that Scott's talking about, though. I mean, that radical nature of that kind of acceptance would allow it to happen again, because it will happen again, I mean, really. If we are that, you know, infallible, or not infallible, fallible, it will happen again. And that seems to be more realistic.
There's a kind of paradox in that. that place provides the energy of transformation that does allow us to get to a different place. And so it sounds like we're speaking out of two sides of our mouth. But it's, there's maybe where this mystery comes.
I think acceptance, something in others, is required for forgiveness, and it's required for acceptance of things in ourselves. And that's required for forgiving ourselves. Accept that, yes, others are going to be that way and do that to you, whether you like it or not. You are going to be that same way or some similar ways yourself, whether you like it or not. And you had better be prepared to forgive yourself in the same way. And if you can't forgive others, I don't think you can forgive yourself. I think we have to be ready to forgive ourselves all the time, because we are going to transgress.
In some ways, I think acceptance can say, I love you, but I don't necessarily love what you're doing. Or don't necessarily love how you're behaving, but I love you.
For me, I need to introduce the issue of uncovering as it relates to acceptance. When for me, the unacceptable is very difficult for me to even look at. I don't even want to see it, particularly in myself, much less in someone else. I always want to see the best. I want to see the good. And so I cover up and hide that which is unacceptable in me. I don't let you see that in me. I don't even let, you mentioned men not being able to recognize their own feeling. I don't see it in myself. I don't want to look at it in myself. So it seems to me an element in accepting the unacceptable is to uncover, to make visible, to experience the reality of what is unacceptable.
And by doing that, we're not, at least the way I understand that phrase, we're not asking you to say that it's acceptable.
No, it's not, it doesn't have to be okay.
Right. It still is unacceptable. It may still be unacceptable, but to accept the unacceptable. That there are unacceptable dimensions in your relationship, in yourself, in others. They're unacceptable. That word means unacceptable.
And that is true.
And that is
true. That is true.
Right.
And the truth will free you.
So by saying we're accepting the unacceptable is not saying we're condoning or we're changing our views about them being accepted. Acceptable or not acceptable.
Okay. So much of it, of acceptance is admitting failure and being able to, and failure on both sides. And I think that's why it's hard to let go of the, let other people be failure, because you don't want to be failure also. And yet I think, In accepting that failure, accepting that weakness is great liberation, because I'd be in the gift of faith is in within my pain is where I've met God, not in my perfection. It's where I've been in my
at the same time. I think there's victimization that there hasn't been failure on both sides.
Say that again.
Seems to me that what she's talking about is true in some cases, but in other cases, I think people have been victimized where there isn't a failure quotient on both sides.
So aren't we failing because we are expecting the other person to be perfect? Isn't that a failure on our part?
Yeah.
I think
think it's quite right that there's many cases, and it's not the child failing, because the only way a child could fail in certain situations were if they were an extremely well-prepared adult, because even most adults can't handle certain things. If you know, beat up a small child in the smithereens, right. I mean, is it the child's fault if he's not bigger and stronger and doesn't know how to run and where to hide? Right.
Good point.
I guess what I see, I really listening to, I hear you, and kind of think about it, and I think I hear the word standards that really came up to me, and I think with the past, if I don't forgive, then I'm stuck there, and I stay there in my anger. But I think that for each action that I own from then on, then I can choose and say, this isn't okay, and this isn't okay with me, and it's not acceptable, this behavior. But the acceptance of the past, that it really happened, and that that's a fact, and there's really nothing you can do about it. And you just, but we're all fallible. And if it isn't this particular thing, it might be something else that we do that we don't even know about that we may need forgiven for also. And I think that's where both we have to be, not just say what we would do in someone else's shoes, like I wouldn't have done that, but you have to step into that person's shoes as if you were that other person. And somehow, there has to be this element of care where you try to accept whatever it is. But I know that you get stuck for a really long time if you, forgiveness or going through something never happens. It's like you just get stuck there for a really long time. And that's the part where you hurt yourself instead of someone else hurting you.
Okay, one more, Robert.
I'm having difficulty with the word accept. I think a number of other people are. And then when we say that we accept the unacceptable, that's a contradiction in terms.
Right.
I would like to consider or think about accept with the word knowledge of. Knowledge rather than accept.
Okay, we need to move on to this last thing, but three more.
Part of the recovery, part of the process of acceptance is a leap of faith. It's a saying, I feel angry, I feel pain, but I want to go beyond that. And so you just take a blind leap of faith and let the grace of God do the healing. There's a point in times we can't do it.
Well, I was going to say something too about what Robert has said, and I thought, you know, the thing about acceptance is acknowledging a situation as it is, acknowledging the feelings that you're having about something or whatever. But I've been thinking too about someone who comes to my mind as someone who's trying to be perfect, St. Augustine. And if you read his confessions, you see a person who, you know, is trying to please God or whatever, but you see his acknowledgement of his experience, his knowledge of himself, his knowledge of his failures, his pains, his life or whatever. And you see him not so much, I don't know, you just see a guy who's just opening up his mind to God and really being present to what that's about. anyway.
Great. Well, a couple things. First of all, it's helpful to me to remember that I cannot perfectly forgive. Only God is capable of perfect forgiveness. And that forgiveness that God gives us is declared, not on the basis of work, but on the basis of his love. Forgiveness for me is a process. And an image that comes to mind is Corrie Ten Boom's story of telling her story to this group of people, and then people came up to her afterwards, and one of the people that came to her was the guard, who was especially cruel, and he reached out to her and asked her for forgiveness, and she was not capable of doing that. But she said that there was a power that lifted her hand to reach out to him to declare that forgiveness. But she said it did not come from her at all. Although, you know, I may not experience that kind of divine power, it's helpful to know that God covers my inability to forgive with his forgiveness.
Okay, one more.
To kind of recap what they all said, we are human. We are human. Like you were saying, acknowledge all those feelings. We are not God. And we cannot be perfect because we cannot be God. Accept the fact that we are truly human. With, like you said, all that whole square, and to feel comfortable with that, the good and the bad.
Okay. I think what I want to do is end with this one other piece that David Augsburger talks about the fact that it's absolutely true that many of us have been abused as children or even in other situations that where we are innocent. But as in adulthood, what we do with that is terribly crucial. And that we are in control of what we do with that. And he writes, the initial step in dealing with the intense feelings of being wrong and the confirmed conviction that the other is the sole wrongdoer is to give up the attitude of injured innocence and stand alongside once more in loving identification. Significant movement toward forgiving begins as we bring an end to blaming and move toward the recognition of our joint participation. Now, so I say that has to be set in its appropriate context because we're not talking about joint participation in an experience where we were wronged.
That's painful when you use it with kids.
What?
That bit is somehow irritating when you use it as with children, because the very problem that children often have when they have been abused is that they feel they were responsible.
Right.
So what is the context then that you're putting it in?
Well, in terms of how you're dealing with those issues now, what does it mean to let go of your injured innocence?
I think there's a real, that it can be a real trap of, in being a victim of being self-righteous, because there is real injustice that has been done. And in the self-righteousness, there's no forgiveness.
When you're a child, you are innocent.
but by the time you're an adult, you're part of the problem because it hasn't affected you. And at that point, you have to accept that you're part of that and identify with it and see it in yourself to begin to deal with it. And maybe in that, you forgive that part of the other person, but that also happened to you because it started who knows how far back. But once you're an adult, there's an expectation or a need that you begin to look at yourself and see where you were infected by what happened to you and not and try in your own way to not pass it on as much as you got it, at least to lose a little bit.
I keep seeing acceptance with grieving. Okay. Grieving for that lost relationship that wasn't there. I can't accept it until I grieve for it.
Grieving is very important. One of the films we have in the village that I encourage you all to see, but particularly the men to see, is the interview that Bill Moyer did with Robert Bly on men grieving for the loss of their fathers. Most men have grown up in a situation where fathers have not been present emotionally.
Repeat the title of that, please.
All I know is this Robert Bly, Bill Moyer interview. I don't know.
It's called The Gathering of Men.
The Gathering of Men.
Yeah. If there's enough interest, we can
show it.
Make it available.
Yeah. So grieving is very important.
I was thinking about the fact that if we refuse to forgive, we are trying to continue that innocence into adulthood that we had as a child. We're trying to remain innocent. We're not innocent anymore, we're not adults. But somehow, if we refuse to deal with that and let go of that, we're still wanting to continue that illusion of being innocent.
That's another split in us, isn't it, between this blemished, unblemished, innocence, maturity, wanting to somehow live on the unblemished, innocent, you know, Garden of Eden sort of side. And we need to remember that whole story, which has to do with Adam and Eve being thrown out and wanting to return. There were two trees in the garden. Ultimately, eat of the tree of, there was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life, right? Now to get back to the garden, they have to, I can never remember the guards at the gate. There's one, something with a swirling sword and fire or something, but, you know, it's an arduous, I mean, it's quite a journey. But yeah, we want to live on the light, bright, shiny, innocent, blemished side.
That also goes back to, too, for me, is thinking that in childhood I may not have had the skills to deal with whatever I was victimized by, but in adulthood I do. Maybe I don't choose to deal with it because I'm angry, but I do have the capability in myself to deal with it. And so that's where I am. I'm not innocent. I have capability.
Okay, I want to honor our time here. Our time is up. What we'd like to suggest to you is that you do some individual work on issues that are cooking with you. Confusions that may have come out of the morning, something that was underscored for you that you thought about before, some things that you see quite differently than perhaps you saw the direction of the group this morning, pains in your past, the happy child that you wish to recover into your present. Just whatever is moving with you, and we'd like to suggest that you use an art medium, or if that doesn't appeal to you, perhaps some writing. But we do have available a variety of ways that you could work at holding those issues for yourself personally through art. Sally, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that could be possible the next hour.
Okay. We've set up several different areas with materials that you can use to, you know, further express your feelings and ideas. If any of you have been downstairs, you know that we're doing a lot of remodeling, so our craft area is a little bit limited right now. So what I decided to do is to split these areas up and put some of them in the dining room. So over in the dining room, you'll find chalk and paint and other materials to use if you wanted to do that kind of expression. Along with that, there are a lot of magazines that don't have a lot of pictures, because we don't seem to have a lot of magazines with pictures of Poland. But lots of magazines, and I think if you look through them, you might find the kind of picture that you or a little saying that you might want to use. I pulled out a couple of them while I was putting them, and this one just caught my eye, because yesterday in our I Am session, we were putting, you know, our child in a room, and this one just says room for lease, so if anybody has a room they want to get rid of, you might want to grab this one real fast. But I think you can have a lot of fun if you pay attention to some of the little phrases and sayings. I think Scott could have fun with this one that says, in the valley of the shadow. We teach Scott a lot about shadow from Jung's teaching. Someone in the village has been, some people in the village have been working on image books, and I just brought a couple of these pages that I borrowed along to share with you. You can have a lot of fun thinking about maybe expressing things about yourself that you can affirm, or ways that you want to change yourself. This one says, announcing, I feel great, I can be fun, and talks about laughter. This one is changing from a watcher to a doer, and has a fish and some bait that with a little saying that says, a new angle. You might want to do a collage, you know, fill the whole page, but anyway, I think you can have a lot of fun with that. So those things are over in the dining room. And then downstairs in the craft room, I put out clay and some boards to work on and some water and things. I think the best way to do this is to just let people decide what you want to do, and then you have at least half hour, 45 minutes. It's an hour to lunch now, so that should give you some time to do that. And we'll leave those materials out all day long, too, so if you wanted to get back to them. And then, as Scott said, if you choose to write, that's probably material that you have yourself to use. I think probably I'll go downstairs first and kind of get people headed in that direction, and then I'll catch up in the dining room if you need any more materials over there.
I'd encourage you in two ways. One is that, of course, we're not interested in art for art's sake here anyway, but art for your own expression's sake. And I'd even encourage you to try a medium that you haven't tried before.